4 o'clock. Okay. It is 4 o'clock, July 8th. I'd like to call the IGU board meeting to order. Erica, could you please call the roll?
Chair Eisenberg. Recording in progress.
Here.
Vice Chair Dawson. Director Wilkin.
Present by Zoom.
Director Miller.
Here.
Director Kelly. Director Wall?
Here.
Director Wilder?
Here.
You have four.
Okay, thank you. Can I have a motion to approve the agenda and the consent agenda with the removal of the approval of finances, which we'll handle later?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
I'll second.
Okay. Any other removals? Hearing none. Without objection, we're approved. We take it to public comment. Anyone in the room like to make public comment? Are we looking over the shoulder? Nope. Okay. How about online? Anybody want to make a public comment online? Okay, I will close public comment, which takes us now to reports. And we got Clay online, I see. So, the harvest update. Go ahead, Lena.
Good afternoon, everyone. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can.
All right. Unfortunately, I was thwarted by Alaska Airlines 2 months in a row now. My flight was delayed, and then canceled. So you're stuck with me online here. But before we dive into the slides, one thing I guess I'd like to take advantage of being here online, we have a drone video from last week at the facility that I'd like to share real quick, just to give you guys a glimpse of the progress. Erica, if I just hit share, is it going to go? Okay, here we go. See if this works. Can you see an image of the facility there?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to hit play. I have it sped up a little bit so we don't spend too much time on this, but I think this is pretty much how everything will look in its final form. So here we go. One of our lead operators is there and took this video. In the foreground there, you can see the flare and the pretreatment building. Big fin fans in the middle there in between the buildings. The nitrogen or liquefaction building there on the right with the tanks and the truck loading area with the scale at the very bottom of the screen there. Flow station 3 in the background. Pump station 1 way off in the background there. The entire staging area over on the LES chem third of the pad has been cleared. No stuff laying around waiting to be installed. This is pretty much how she'll look for going into operations. But gives you kind of a bird's eye view. You can see lots of vehicles out there. We're currently averaging around 60 workers a day out there wrapping up construction and delivering commissioning. Let's see. All right. So just kind of a neat bird's eye view. Love it when the operators get a minute to take one of these and send it to us. All right, it gives you a little bit of a flavor of how far along we are here. I'll see if I can figure out how to unshare. Get back to the slides. Let's see.
Erica. If you start sharing, you'll take over.
Okay. Yeah, can you take over, Erica?
Okay.
All right. So just a little teaser there. We want to dive on into the construction update. First slide here. So on this one, not a lot left to say on construction. So some pretty big milestones over the last month. Both the power building and pretreatment building are mechanically complete. Electrical scope is complete. They've been turned over for commissioning. There's a few odds and ends, fire and gas system items being worked out. But other than that, Those two major components of the facility are done and turned over to commissioning. So very exciting. The nitrogen and liquefaction building sitting right around 85% complete. The main bits left there, the heavy hydrocarbon compressor piping, we'll have a picture of that later. They're just wrapping that up, and then really the bulk of remaining construction work is on the electrical side in the nitrogen building. They're continuing to pull cables and stuff and terminate, get all that plugged in. We'll have some pictures of that here in a little bit as well. The truck loading area, the new Arctic-rated kiosk, the long-awaited Arctic kiosk is on site and installed. All the cryogenic piping, braided hosing, all that is being installed out at the truck loading facility or truck loading module as well. And the scale installation is underway. The scale is physically in, so we'll have a picture of that to see as well. But really, as you saw in the video, the facility from the outside is pretty much how it's going to look when it goes into operations. So huge progress there. Wrapping up the last few items over the next few weeks, but construction is really well on its way. Let's see if we want to go ahead and transition to commissioning. Go ahead.
And so this, you know, may not be for Clay, it might be for IGU, but what is the purpose of the scale? Do we pay by weight, or is it just a DOT thing?
So it's twofold. So it serves the DOT purpose as well, but we actually measure and sell the LNG based on weight. That's the most accurate way to measure cryogenic liquids. You know, some facilities elsewhere use Coriolis meters and they purely measure on gas, but the most accurate way to do it is on weight.
And is that the way we've done it in the past, coming from?
From Canada, yes. Huh. From Titan, no, because at Titan we're the customer, it's less critical. But we still, so in Fairbanks, the way we would double check against the scale, we have both level indicators inside the storage facility as well as Coriolis meters.
Another example where this is, so we have a small LNG facility down at Ignacio in Colorado, and they sell everything on weight as well. But that's pretty much industry standard for trucked LNG volumes where there's multiple customers.
In our experience, doing that from CryoPeak, it matches every time. It's pretty on point.
Yeah. Yep.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions on the construction side before we move into commissioning?
Don't see any.
All right. Commissioning update. And I'll read off some numbers here that differ slightly from your slide. I got an update at our team meeting this morning on some of these. So this is just kind of an indicator of how fast things are moving in this phase. So on construction turnover, we're now at 63 packages. Turned over, so you know that's another, is that 9 since last week. Of the total, 14 of these are the sort of non-commissionable items. We talked about this last time. 8 of those are now turned over versus 7. All but 3 of the remaining packages that are out there are in the nitrogen building or the truck scale scopes. So, you know, as I mentioned, pretty much everything in the power building and pretreatment has been turned over. So lots of progress there. One of the things that we've been measuring as far as tracking progress is the loop checks. So in the commissioning process, when they wire up every single device that's around the facility, they have to check the electrical loop between the control system and the device. And so in total, we have about 1,960 devices. As of this morning, 706 of those have been checked and completed. So a little bit of terminology there, but the full loop checking out means that all functions of an instrument or device have been verified with the control system. So the crew up there from Red Ridge and the Harvest folks and the different vendors are working through each one of these individually to make sure everything's working correctly. And they're getting through those at a rate of about 20 to 60 a day, depending on what system they're working on. Certain ones require a little more effort than others. As far as commissioning milestones, major milestone of this last month was we now have gas in the facility. This is super exciting. We are running on our own generated power from the power building, so the capstone microturbines were burned in on the week of June 23rd. It's basically like your break-in period, and we're currently now using our own generated power. Now, with this comes a little bit of added complexity because we're now working in a live facility, so everything that the workers are wearing, everything now has to be FR. There's just a lot more control of work that has to take place to make sure we keep everybody safe as we commission this facility. So, big milestone, but it adds a little bit of complexity as well. On the pre-treatment building, we just completed the building integrity test. So if anybody's had a home energy evaluation done on their home where they come in and they put a big blower on your door to see where your home or how efficient your home is at keeping heat in. It's similar to that. And this was completed on basically the first day, first try. It's pretty rare for a facility like this to check out that quickly. So this is a testament to the quality of the work that's been done there. Usually it takes multiple days, and if they can't find where the inefficiencies are in the building, they'll actually bring in smoke, put the blower on, and see where the smoke's coming out of the building. We didn't have to do any of that. It passed very quickly, so that was great. The pre-treatment building, functional checkout, so this is all the control systems and last bits. We anticipated that on 7-3. It's still in progress, so a little bit of delay on that one. All the comms and instruments are 100% complete, but we discovered a little bit of a pump motor wiring issue that they're working on. We expect to have that wrapped up and that fully functional checkout all complete by the end of this week. Kind of other odds and ends items, the final fill of perlite, that's the insulation that goes in the tall cold box tower. The last of that was put in with a few bags to spare. And then the last bits of work, as I mentioned, on the fire and gas system and HVAC system are going. The thermal oxidizer and the flare were blown down, and they are basically ready to be lit. We have our vendor Zico coming up this next week, so we expect to have those operational as well at that time. So lots of progress. Commissioning in general is the main scope of work that's going on at this time, moving fast and furious. The upcoming activity around commissioning is really all about the remaining first fills, so our glycol system, or TDG, amine, and then demineralized water. Those systems are all getting filled as we speak. The more complicated part is for each one of these systems that we turn on, a lot of the vendors that provided the equipment have to be on site. So we're doing a pretty elaborate dance and scheduling gymnastics. Our logistics team here, which is basically our two admins here in the office, are doing a tremendous job making sure we can get everybody up and on site. We're overlapping with turnaround season up on the slope, so about every bed on the north slope is full right now, so it's no small feat getting all the logistics lined up and everything moved around for these folks as they come up. So for the pretreatment building, the big ones coming up, Enerflex, they're the main provider of the pretreatment equipment, and we also have Tulsa Heaters, Zico, Sundyne coming up. And then some of the big heavy hitters in the nitrogen building, the actual liquefaction process. Cosmodyne, obviously our primary provider, along with Halliburton and Air Liquide, Relevant, And then the last couple, Solar for the big turbine in there and Ingersoll Rand, all coming up in the next week or so. Any questions on the commissioning process? And we've got a little bit more on how this relates to timeline coming up in a couple slides. So if there's nothing else, we can move on.
I think we're good.
All right. Go to the next slide. Okay, so this is kind of that high-level Gantt chart we've looked at a few times. Now, one bit of a headwind, and I alluded to this a little bit earlier on, but our first LNG date has slipped back a couple weeks. We're now targeting August 13th. Take note that you know, we're specifically saying August 13th. We have this commissioning process planned down to the device at this point. So we're starting to get a lot more precision around how much time we think everything will take and what's remaining left to do. We'll talk more about that on the next slide. But we anticipate now first LNG on August 13th, followed pretty quickly there with performance testing, and we're still holding confident with our commencement date of September 1st. Now, a couple of the reasons for this slippage from July into August here. Electricians have continued to be a challenge, getting enough electricians on site. And it's not so much the total number of electricians as it is the ratio of journeymen to apprentice electricians. There's just too much scope that requires kind of journeyman attention to have just anybody up there plugging things in. So one of the things we've done to address this, we brought in a subcontractor called Baywater. And so they'll be supporting Nana to kind of keep the electrical work on pace. The bulk of the remaining construction work is all the electrical scope in the nitrogen building. So that's where this group is really focused. They got up there on site, I believe, Monday, and have hit the ground running. So the team is looking at how best to deploy them and get all that work finished up. On the commissioning side, as I mentioned, we've got a huge number of vendors that are coming in and out of the facility for each different piece of equipment that's getting checked out and started up. And you know, as timing has slipped around, we've run into a couple blackout dates for certain vendors where they just can't get there until a certain time. Obviously, we're pushing as hard as we can to get them up, but some of it, we've taken a little bit of that work in-house to get things ready and really maximize the efficiency of when these folks are on site. So a lot of pre-work going on. Anything we can do without the vendor on site, we are getting it done. And the last thing I mentioned there, you know, building, just as we have to shuffle around these vendors and what days are coming, it all goes back to making sure we can have a room to put these people in while we're up there. So lots of challenges on that front, but we're working through it, and I think we're still feeling really confident that we'll have commencement date of September 1st. Any questions on this?
I think we're good again.
All right. So there should be a handout in the room that is basically this same slide. What I really want to draw your attention to is the difference that just 1 week makes. So you know, these two slides, this is the level of detail we're tracking all these different activities in. So you know, the top chart, that is the percent complete of all the different commissioning scopes. So you see we have construction turnover on the left, the incomplete work log tracker, that actually translates to the chart at the bottom, our functional checkouts in the middle there, our commissioning and startup activities. So each one of these we're measuring individually so we can track progress, but as I said, you know, the spreadsheet that's behind this is down to the individual device level. So the commissioning process, extremely detailed, making sure we get the sequencing right, the vendors right, everything lined up. So if you kind of look and flip back and forth between the 1 week ago and then the one that we sent around today, you can see where there's measurable progress across a ton of these. The chart that's on the bottom there, those are the kind of incomplete work list. So these are the different items that have to be completed before the different piece of kit can be commissioned. This just gives you a bit of a glimpse into how much detail we're tracking all this in, each of the different scopes. So lots of progress happening every day up there. It's really the commissioning process, even though it's a logistical juggling act, is really coming together quickly. I know there's a lot on there. I don't expect you to go through each and every one of these while we're here on the phone, but please let me know if you have questions. These are moving fast and furious. I imagine by the time we look at all this again, it will look very, very different. So, with that, we can take a look at some of the progress pictures with some of the milestones I mentioned before. I'll go to the next one. So this photo, I love this photo. This is the operator out there getting ready to let fuel gas flow into the facility. So the big thumbs up from the guy there in the scaffolding on the right. That was a big day getting gas into the plant. Move on to the next one. I mentioned kind of the critical work front where we really need all that electrician support is pulling those last cables into the electrical building. So again, I know we've talked about cable pulls over and over and over again, but these are massive cables going all around the facility. You can see folks working at heights, got the scissor lift in there, and you can see how these all rack into the building, but this really is the final construction scope here on this side. Move up to the next one, the famous Arctic rated truck loading kiosk. The operators will be very appreciative to be in this version, not the original one that was delivered, which was more of a tin can. This one fully insulated, ready to go. And flip to the next one, you can see the truck scale install. So this is where the actual LNG will be weighed out. And no, that is not resting there on the ground. There are pilings under each corner there that go deep into the ground, and it's mounted to those on the different load cells. So rest assured it'll be accurate. All right, then we flip to the next one. You can see I mentioned that heavy hydrocarbon piping. That was kind of the last bit of complex piping going in. And then on the left there, we've talked multiple times about this big bore piping that goes in and out of the LNG cold box there. That is all in place and completed. So tons of progress. Looking forward to having you all up to see the site again. Every time we see it, it's crazy how fast this is all coming together. So that's it for my update at this point. If there's any other questions, let me know.
Sherry,
good. Hi, Clay. Good to see you.
So you mentioned
the critical work front of the nitrogen building cable poles. Do you see any other critical tasks that could further delay the opening?
As we go through and commission systems, that's where we'll discover if there's any wiring or anything like that that's not in correctly. I don't see any, there's no sort of big long lead items remaining that I'm aware of that could be a showstopper here. It's really how quick can we get that electrical work done and then get all the vendors to cycle through and get their respective pieces of the plant commissioned. So, you know, there can always be gremlins in there as we get through the commissioning process, but there's nothing jumping out as a huge high risk item at this point. All the things we've identified have been solvable so far, so feeling good about it. Any other questions?
Okay. But thanks a lot for all the attention to detail. This is where it gets real. All those little wires.
Absolutely.
At the end, it's the right place to be terminated right, and a lot of things have to come together to make this work. So good job.
Absolutely. We'll keep you all updated and look forward to turning this thing on. So thank you all again. Apologize for not being there in person. I prefer to do these in person, but next month we'll get it.
Okay. Tell them thanks for the video. Fun.
Absolutely. I'll pass that along.
Okay. Thanks, Clay.
All right. Thank you all. You all have a good night.
Thank you for me. Yeah.
I have another question regarding weighing the trucks. So they weighed empty too?
Yes.
They weighed empty. Every truck is weighed empty, and then after it's full.
Correct.
And every time.
Correct.
Sitting on the scale when they're loading.
Oh, it's sitting on the scale when they're loaded. I get it. Okay.
It's pretty accurate.
Very efficient.
Yep. That is
pretty cool. So how long does it take to load?
I'm sorry?
How long does it take to load?
We don't know yet from this particular facility. We are estimating about an hour.
And the operator sits in the cab for an hour?
Yes.
Hanging out?
Well, the operator can also sit inside the control room and watch.
Yeah.
That's what happens at offloading now. Drivers sit in a very similar looking kiosk at one of the storage sites, and they know what to monitor for until it completely offloads.
Yeah, we'll have the operator in the kiosk, and then also our control room there is in the power building. So all right. Thank you all very much. Have a good meeting.
I can see why he's happy you've been further then.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, thanks, Craig.
Yep, have a good one.
Okay, moving on to operations report. Lena.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. George prepared the operations report. It is on page 21 of 58 in your packet. I'm just going to very quickly highlight two of these things if there's any additional conversation or questions you have for George. He's available here. One of the things is something that we've tried to do differently this year, and it's working very well. Is the way we chose to to schedule the installations. In a typical year, we have service line crews and main line crews that are doing installations, and they start at the same time. This year, so that our grant work happens in the proper fiscal year, we started with working on, we prioritized service lines, so all of our construction crews were doing service lines, which is why we already have 75 service lines in the ground of the 159 that were approved for construction out of the date of this report. But then one additional positive thing that came out of that is because we're prioritizing service line installations, then that additionally gives people more time during the time that it's warm out to swap out boilers. So of these, 19 are already IGU customers and burning today. George and Chris, who's our project manager, are doing that with seasonal crews. We get a lot of repeat seasonals who come to us year after year. A lot of the people are also new, and they're doing a great job. The second thing to highlight here is less of a positive thing, but our pretreatment system at Titan occasionally isn't fully properly calibrated, and sometimes it allows for it doesn't strip a sufficient amount of CO2, which then CO2 gets into trailers, and then it gets to Fairbanks, and then we upload. There is a strainer that catches the bigger pieces of CO2. It just forms into ice. What the smaller particles can keep going, and this is what happened in this case. It blocked our the main line where we load LNG into the storage site 3. This is not a new scenario. It happens more often than we would like to admit. And what happened this time, because it is so warm outside, and we were unable to, while we were thawing out the line at site 3, we were unable to load into site 3.
We had a few days worth of trailers that stacked up during that period, and because it's so warm out, the town is consuming so much less, and we have to worry both about tank pressure and about system pressure, and that's not naturally absorbed as it would any other time. We had a backlog of trailers. We asked the hospital to turn on. You will see that on the next month's financial report. In order for us to be able to do that, we offered them that we would match the costs that they're currently getting for heating oil. We also asked the university to turn on, and they were they had some scheduled maintenance, and they were going to turn on anyway. We asked them to turn on a little bit early, and so they turned on so that it can burn for us. Unfortunately, their system wasn't able to burn on gas for too long, so they burned for us for about 6 hours or so, and then several days later they burned for their scheduled maintenance, and that helped suck some of that pressure down. We still have some backlog of trailers to offload. It's not significant. Everything is under control. I'm just sharing that this is something that we've experienced. It is giving us a great opportunity to test the new trailers, and they're holding great. We do not exceed the operating pressure, and they haven't been venting. One thing that that people's minds very often goes to in the summer, especially when we have issues with offloading, is how operational the ground cooling system is, and we check it all the time. We have daily checks and we have monthly checks, and everything is functioning properly. That concludes my report, and that concludes the operations report that George gracefully prepared and allowed me to talk about. Unless there are any questions for George or I.
I'm just curious, what is line pack?
Line pack is essentially when there's so much gas in the line that that it adding any more pressure into the line would make the system exceed maximum operating pressure, and so we have to stop doing any offloads, because anytime you do an offload, you add warmer gas into the colder gas, and that creates additional boil-off gas, and that boil-off gas typically in the winter just goes straight into the distribution system and it gets sucked. But imagine I guess for us it's easier to explain that with solids, right? You pack a line with a solid, but it's the exact same except with
gas. So turning UA on the hospital on reduced the line.
Correct.
What's the maximum operating pressure you go to?
We stay at 55 because our system is designed for 60 right now. It could go the lines themselves could go to 100. PSI, but the regulators would have to be changed as individual meters. Am I speaking out of turn here?
The maximum design pressure for the lines, spec on the SDR-11 pipe, is about 101.5. The maximum operating pressure that we've assigned to our system is 60 PSI, which is largely industry standard, except we're going to be commissioning a transmission line at 100 PSI to help supplement flow in the wintertime. We'll be commissioning that when we fire up the vaporizers in October.
Semantics, same question, but so transmission and distribution are two different worlds in gas supply. Mm-hmm. And so are you just calling it a transmission line because it's higher pressure?
Or it's a transmission line by definition, set by PHMSA. If you're going from a gathering or storage center to a pressure-reducing station, then it's classed as a transmission line. Okay. By technicality, if you were going off the pressure rating, 100 PSI could still be rated as a distribution pressure. It's just classed by the endpoints.
Okay. Sure.
Lastly, so they fixed 11 of the trailers. There's two left. Have they tested them on the Dalton?
We did one test. Roger is here. Roger was the driver of the trailer, of the truck that was pulling the trailer. We've tested it in one instance, and it. I'm not going to put words into Roger's mouth, but it worked as expected.
Okay, Jim, do you have any? Are you online now? I don't see your his phone number.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Jim, welcome to the meeting. Okay, any more questions on the operations report? Seeing none, we'll move on to the finance report. Finance committee report. Jack.
Yeah, thank you. First of all, I want to apologize for meeting, not making the last meeting, although I do have an excuse. Some may consider it to be a lame excuse, but it is an excuse, is that I didn't receive an invitation to the meeting. In other words, all the time my calendar has an IPU created Outlook calendar meeting, and I still got them for all my for this meeting, for the other week of the what's the other meetings called? The
workshop
meetings. Those are all there. But all of a sudden, my invitations to the finance committee meeting ended in April rather than or May or something like that. Whatever the last one was. So anyway, that was my excuse.
I should have known. I should have known when you said lame that it wasn't going to be lame. So.
But I have reviewed the since then. I have reviewed the financials that we created, and I don't really have much in the way of comments. There was one thing I thought that might be an error, but it was insignificant, so I don't bother even wanted to bother going over that. So I'm going to go to page 30, which is the dashboard. And there you can see, you know, when you look at the green dots and the red dots, those essentially have not changed in the last meeting. In other words, we're pretty much in the same financial condition that we were at the previous meeting. The only change was storage went from yellow to red. A slight change in the percentage mm-hmm. on that. From last month, one thing to bring, I think, is worth bringing to your attention, and we did talk about this at the last meeting too, is that we're still almost 900,000 gallons below budget on storage, and so I just thought that I would give Zach a chance to talk about that. Is there any? Are we any real issue here? Are we concerned that we're not going to get enough storage to last us through the winter? Anything like that?
No, not at this time. We don't have the complete forward projections completed. A lot of it ties into clay. So the reason the number is lower than what the budget anticipated is because we were expecting North Slope gas at this point. Mm-hmm. So we were maximizing the North Slope at this point in the budget, and the budgeted number of LNG was significantly higher.
Well, that's the reason why it's lower.
That's
but
right.
The real question is, can we rebuild it, you know, to the level that we need, you know, during the winter?
That's what we're doing right now. So, other than the slowdown that we've received with, you know, the offloads, we've been maximizing offloads. These new trailers, like Elena said, they're holding their pressure. So we are getting colder LNG. Not only are we getting colder LNG, we're really maximizing the amount of offloads we're getting. So fewer loads, same amount of LNG. So it's more from an efficiency standpoint, it's looking good.
Mm-hmm. I see that we did increase the amount in the tank by about 200,000 gallons. So there has been an increase in the storage, just way beyond on budget.
The real answer, if I may,
The real answer to that question is going to be highly dependent on when the actual startup of the harvest plant is. Zach and his team are preparing for the audit, the financial audit that already started, and because of that, and that's why the timeline for what I'm about to say is a little bit longer than what you would typically likely expect. But by mid-August, we're going to have forward projections on LNG, and we will then have the ability to look at it and forecast different start dates. We will be able to share with the board what happens if the startup is at different times into the future. In the meantime, we have been getting some Cryopeak LNG. It is available currently. We had to put a stop to deliveries until we catch up with offloading our own trailers. I just had them stop on July 26th. And as soon as we're back caught up, we'll have them keep going. And that is not any additional LNG. That is the same 250,000 gallons that the board knows about.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So other things, and this is typical of what's been in the past, but our year-to-date cost of per MCF is considerably below the budget year-to-date, and that the projected at the end of the fiscal year, which has already happened, we have ended our 2025 fiscal year, entering now into our 2026. And so, at least projected at the time this was written, was $1.68 below what the budget was. So everything looks good. Any questions?
Just a note. The people that were at the meeting, we looked at line 86 of page 23, and in the future, they're going to account for the extra payroll. So maybe rather than just dividing it like two per month, just doing the 52 weeks, or how are we going to do that?
Yeah.
So we're not going to have that budget over.
So in the past, our budget, a lot of the terms I like to use is I was thinking the word thing. We have timing differences, largely due to payroll in the past, and how we budget is we just take the payroll divided by 12 months. However, we're on a biweekly pay period, and so there are 2 months out of every year where we have a third payroll. So what we did is we just figured out what months had the third payroll and projected that would be a higher payroll expense in the month. So those timing differences in labor, in theory, should go away.
Okay, any other questions? So, with no questions, I move that the board accept the May financials as presented.
Second. Moved and seconded. Any debate? Discussion? Hearing none. Without objection? Approved. Okay. Thank you, Jack.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll move on to new business. We've got the bylaw review on page 32.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Gary.
I'm sorry, was I asleep? Did I miss the comptroller summary?
It was wrapped into the financials. We went through it, so you made a comment. Gary asked a question on one part of it.
No, he's talking about
on page... On page 22.
We didn't go through it. We went through it at the Finance Committee meeting.
Yes.
Do you have a question, Gary?
I did, but I guess my first question is, will there be a report from Zach for the comptroller summary for this meeting? If so, I wanted to ask him on line 22 a question.
Go ahead and ask the question, Gary.
Zach, I wanted to get a sense of when you say $1,290 degree days below budget. What percent is that? Is that 2% or 10% or 20%? What is the effect, the percentage effect because of the warm weather?
One moment. I think 8%, but if you give me 1 second, I'll tell you exactly.
That's my recollection also.
9%.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Just tonight, well, what did you say? I couldn't hear.
9%.
About 9%, so about, okay. All right, thank you. And so could I, are we not going to have a comptroller summary?
Would you like, if you'd like one, we can do it, or you can have...
It's just part of the agenda, so I just wondered if he was prepared, we would certainly ask him to do it. If it's not part of the, if we aren't going to do it, then it shouldn't be part of the agenda.
What I don't understand is... How is it part of the agenda?
It's not on the agenda.
Well, let's see. Let me go back to my agenda here.
It said the financial report, and Jack was giving the financial report, and Zach answered some questions on the comptroller's report.
Yes, sir. I got that. I'm looking. Here's my agenda.
You're looking at my agenda for the finance.
My agenda under reports, the second bullet is the operations report on page 21.
Correct. And the third one is the Finance Committee report.
Yes, that's right. Oh, I see. Oh, okay. So I'm confusing operations with comptroller. Okay, that's my fault. Thank you.
Okay. No problem. Okay, now we're going to move on to the bylaw review. So, Elena.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In an effort to... keep the packet thinner. The bylaws were included in the electronic version. I sent that along with the board packet. Our management does not have any recommended changes to the bylaws. That concludes my report.
Okay.
Do you have a copy of the bylaws you can pull up?
Okay.
Yeah.
I just have a couple things.
Right. Eventually, one of the ones that we have to take out is the one with the sunset clause at the very end. I think that was a fail-safe in case we kind of got stood up and didn't do anything. But I think that those days are long past us now. So eventually, I'd like to go talk to the borough before we pull the trigger on some modification that they're not going to like. Probably next year.
We're just pulling up the bylaws.
All right, so
you ready?
Anybody else have any questions? All right, so Article 2, I was just looking at point 3. Might be better stated, facilitate, to make an action or process easier. Instead of the parenthetical. So just say facilitate, to make an action or process easier, I would recommend.
Okay.
And then scrolling to Article 3, I'm a little confused about the initial terms of IGU directors. Is that just something that stays in the bylaws forever, or do you update the years?
I thought we changed all that. Didn't you update that a while back?
I don't, but it's specifically indicated as initial terms.
Initial terms?
Yeah, and I see no reason to ever change it. I mean, as far as the bylaw is set up, it's something that's supportive of us now, but it's...
I think that's what got us on the sequence of every 3 years. And
I think that because these bylaws, changing these bylaws would require action of the assembly, we just didn't touch it. Because
right.
Nothing
so,
was wrong.
So it's not just us changing our bylaws, we have to submit it to the assembly, and the assembly has to approve.
Even like small technical?
Yeah, anything.
Like the thing I suggested before?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
That's why...
So why did I go through them?
Well, no.
We go through every year. Every year we go through to see if there's changes, if there's something significant. Like, one time we changed how we were appointed. Because the first time they were appointed, then we swapped them around and changed some of the terms and who was voting when. So we have made changes in the past.
Okay. Well, if you want to go through the household changing things, then... Article 6, Section 5, Number 4, Board Meetings. It says a public person shall be given 3 minutes. I thought each member of the public shall be given 3 minutes rather than a public person. Sounded a little strange to me.
So you captured it?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so then, this, like you were mentioning, the sunset review, Article 11. I was confused about the on or before November 15, 2015. Is that another thing that just stays in and that we don't change, or?
Yeah, I think that whole sunset thing can disappear, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it's just confusing to me.
We were formed before that, and they gave us like a 2-year period or something to stand up, and we exceeded that. But I think that, I believe that whole clause is not effective right now.
Yeah, but it's not necessary to remove it either.
Yeah, I don't want to remove it today.
But just note that maybe down the line when you have
Eric's capturing all these comments, all your comments,
okay.
And then when we do to make a change, we'll put them all together in the change and lump them together.
And then number 3, it says such an evaluation shall be undertaken by the board every 10 years, period, and that should be a comma after 10 years, right? Not a period.
Or no punctuation at all.
Jack's an expert on that.
What's that now?
What are we? Three, comma,
no,
whatever.
Where were we at? Every 10 years,
period, and continues on. There should be a comma, and I think
instead of period.
Then you just weighed in with no punctuation at all.
This dialogue shall be undertaken by the board every 10 years.
Comma.
I would say comma. But that's not an Oxford comma.
Okay.
That's just I don't know. I think I don't know. I'm not big on commas, but I think that word would call for a comma there. Definitely not a period.
Yeah.
That's all I have.
Okay. That's your comment.
That's it.
Okay. So Erica has logged those, and next time we can come up with get a bundle enough big enough to send out to the borough for modification, we'll do that. Okay. So no action required? Okay. No change, no action required.
The minutes will just indicate that the board evaluated the bylaws as required by the bylaws.
Okay. And next item of business is the trailer order authorization.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Here, management seeks authorization to proceed with the ordering of the three new cryogenic trailers as has been budgeted and approved by the board through the budget at our last meeting. The budgeted amount was $1.3 million. We would order these from the same manufacturer, Premier Cryogenics, when we sent out the original RFP that where they were chosen to be the successful bidder. We did indicate in there that reserved the right to purchase multiple, to make multiple orders over the years. The original contract we had with Premier Cryogenics said that they would honor the same pricing they gave us for the original set of trailers for one additional year. That period has since expired. However, when we did the contract with them for the axle movement, we had a clause in the contract that they would have to honor the original pricing for one additional year. I will say that the quote they came up with when I requested it for the new trailers was about, was nearly $8,000 more than our original last year's order, and so I was able to, because of the clause in the contract, take that back down. I'm asking for authorization for $1.3 million. However, the total is only expected to be almost $1.2 million, with an additional $20,000 estimated for transport per unit. The one, a couple of things that will be different would be the trailers would have the updated axle configuration to match what we're doing now at Titan. In addition to that, they'll have drum brakes instead of disc brakes. The reason I am asking for the authorization to match the budgeted amount rather than the slightly smaller current quote is because we are working at Middle Fork's recommendation with the Premier Cryogenics to try to figure out an engineering solution for how to ensure that on steep inclines, when trailers aren't completely full, the liquid doesn't pool at the back of the trailer. That is still in development. We don't know how much that would cost, and so I'm hoping that by this we would have sufficient wiggle room to incorporate something like that if it makes sense to include it making sense for payload purposes. So with that, the request management has for the board is to approve the purchase of the trailers for the budgeted amount at $1.3 million.
Sure. Question. So is it typical that there's liquid left after they offload it?
No, we're talking about when the trailer is full. They're not the trailers aren't absolutely full. They're not full to the brim. There's a certain amount of that that you have to leave empty. And so because of that, when you're on a steep incline, which is typical on Dalton Highway, the liquid just pulls on the back.
And what issue does that cause?
Traction.
So how do they solve the traction problem?
Because there's not as much weight then on the
right.
on the wheels.
Tires, yeah. Transfers, like when you're sitting on flat ground, mm-hmm. 40,000 pounds on your drive axle. Mm-hmm. You point it uphill, you have 42,000 on the back to the front, mm-hmm. which is in transfers.
Yeah, got it.
But they're thinking like a typical fuel tank holder. There's multiple compartments. You fill up the front one all the way, fill up the back one. 3/4 of the way, and fill up the middle one all the way. You can transfer that. In the wintertime, you're allowed more weight on your drives north of Fairgrounds for traction purposes. We can't do that with these. But their engineer that came up in March suggested that there might be a solution. Basically, on the front of the trailer.
Okay, makes sense.
So, how do they solve that problem with diesel?
There's three compartments in those tankers.
Do they have compartments?
Yeah. Those tankers have like a capacity of 11,000. You load your front compartment to 4,000, and you're only loading $10 over, you can make that $10 less on the back. And you pointed out, Bill, with three compartments separated, that would stay full in the front to keep all your weight up. Doesn't sound like a good deal when you're on a limit.
Okay, you can learn something here every day. Thanks.
Director Andrews.
Okay, Director Wilkin.
You're muted, Gary.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a number of questions. I'm concerned about the lack of information regarding the pooling issue. So having said that, Elena, is this something has to be passed this this meeting, or can it be put off for a month until we have an idea? We've already had one issue that popped up after order, and it cost us millions of dollars. So do we have even a range of what this baffling system might cost?
We do not. If it were to cost more than the difference between, if it were to cost more than $100,000 for the three trailers, I would have to come back to the board for authorization to get that. And for clarity, we are not suggesting that we do anything different with the trailers we already have. We're just suggesting that any new trailers, we might come up with something. And it's not even guaranteed that that a solution that makes perfect sense would be found. Now, for clarity and to not to minimize Roger's concern, it is a valid concern. But the trailers we have, we will work with those the way that they are. Now, for your second question, or maybe your first, maybe answer your second first. But whether or not this can wait for an additional month, I would advise against it. If I am to order these trailers tomorrow, they will be delivered in June of next year. And the more we wait, the longer the delivery date will be.
I understand that. So let me go back. So what you're saying is that this baffling configuration can't cost us more than $100,000. That eats up what amounts to your wiggle room in this contract, and you'll have no other wiggle room if something else pops up. Is that correct?
Correct. I also don't anticipate something else to pop up. I have quotes from the manufacturer that won't change.
That won't change being what won't change? Total cost?
The only influencer of final cost would be any additions or modifications that we make as a result of the pooling issue. Everything else is standard. We've tested these trailers plenty on the Parks Highway, and they work as they were designed. And we did the one test on the Dolphin.
So I'm reminded of the fact that the North Slope Haul Road was built for hauling heavy loads north and the empty loads south. So I'm wondering if that has something to do with this configuration. I understand that it'll push it back a month, and I guess my question is that month critical? Is next June or July that critical for us that we can't wait and get an estimate of what this baffling system would be?
For additional clarity, I am not guaranteeing that there is a solution that makes sense for the baffling issue. It's not, we're not, there is, this isn't a product that we would be taking off the shelf. This is a product that this trailer manufacturing company is working on engineering specifically for IGU. So I'm not, so with that, I'm not, I don't know that it will be ready by next month if we wait for one other month.
Well, again, we've been snaked at once with a sizable alteration, and I guess I'm concerned that this is going to happen again. And what I'm hearing is that the effect of putting this off a month will delay delivery a year from now a month. Is that a correct statement?
Correct.
All right. Okay. So with that, I don't have the motion in front of me. If someone help me with the number, I would move that the... Again, I don't have it right in front of me. I have it here. Bear with me. I'll get it here in a second.
You're on your screen, Gary.
Yeah, well, I'm on my own screen here. So what are we referencing? And this is just, we're not referencing a... I would like to postpone this until the August 8th meeting. I would move that the purchase of... No, that's not it. Well, I would like to postpone this for the purposes of having a cost on the baffling issue.
Is there a second?
Chair, I have a question. I'm not following what the baffling
issue. You made a motion. I need to either get a second or it's going to die. You know,
I will second it for discussion.
Okay. Go ahead, Chair. For discussion, go ahead.
Gary, could you clarify what the baffling issue is? I'm not following.
In a tank like that, my understanding is baffles.
Yeah,
somebody else can explain it, but it's a way to keep liquids from sloshing back and forth.
I got it.
She was using it as a verb. So it was baffling her. It wasn't baffling her, it was baffles in the tank.
I wish I would have thought of that.
Okay, Mike.
Mr. Chair, I was prepared to make the motion. However, in light of the concerns that Director Wilkins has, I'm willing to wait a month, until he's here and been able to discuss it. Director Wilkins' reasoning, waiting a month for delivery in August instead of July of next year, I haven't really heard. Why that's a deal breaker. So I'm willing to wait to help, get more information for Director, although I was prepared to make the motion to move forward. So unless there's a reason why waiting a month is a real deal breaker, I'd like to hear it, I guess.
Okay.
So it's my understanding that we won't know in a month what the cost of the baffling would be. Even if the baffling is a solution, period, we won't know in a month, will we?
Two parts of the answer for that. I am not sure whether or not we'd know. I would have to specifically ask the manufacturer, but I also don't think, and maybe a question back to you, Director Wilmer, as someone who does engineering for a living, I am not convinced that they would start engineering without a order. So if I may, suggest that if the board is uncomfortable with proceeding with the motion as is, the board could authorize the exact amount that is quoted as of right now without any baffles to match the trailers that we already have. And then once engineering is proposed for the baffles, then I would have to come back in front of the board and request authorization for that.
If necessary.
We still have a motion on the floor. That we have to either vote down. So we have a motion on the floor. So either vote it down. You can't just switch over to that.
Sure, understand. My question on the motion is: would Director Wilkins be satisfied with that approach?
Okay. So Director Wilkins, we have a question. would you be satisfied with the approach that Elena just we gave for the base amount, and then if a solution comes up and a cost estimate is brought forth in the future, we could amend it at that time?
Well, I guess I'm trying to figure out why we would do that. So the Chirogenics would go ahead and start the process to build these three trailers, and then the baffle consideration would come later. So have we not already pulled the trigger on the trailers, irregardless of the baffling coming back, or is there something that's saying the baffling consideration will not exceed X amount, which now I hear is $33,000?
I am not able I do not have authority to approve this purchase and to get anything started according to current procedures, which I am going to attempt to change in the next agenda item here. But no, this is not in motion. I need board approval to sign a contract of $1.3 million or any thing up over $150,000, even if it were less than 1.3.
So I think, Elena, she gave us a price, she had a quote, she brought the price to us, and then you can full disclosure, she was saying, hey, there's some extra money there, and we may want to solve a problem that's been brought to us that may involve baffling. And she gave you a range, and she may or may not be able to go down that path. And so the question is, do you still need the tankers by June, and is our quote still good until June? If we wait, or if we wait another month, is our quote?
Our quote will still be good. Because it takes into consideration the date we signed the contract, not the delivery date.
Right, and so if we approve this bill, or this, not the motion that's on the floor now, but if we approve the motion she's proposing, it would give her authorization to sign the contract and get the two or three trailers underway. And then if they come up with a solution that may or may not work, or they may or may not find a solution, and they propose it, then we could solve it at that point going forward. But right now, she's like to get the base contract moving forward. That's what I think she's asking for.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could, what we've done by moving ahead with this obligation, what we've done is given Chirogenics just they have no reason at all to come back with a cost efficient proposal. I'm worried that we've already spent millions of dollars on a poor axle design that we all participated in. I'm not looking backwards, but in this case, we at least have some leverage to put some pressure on their engineering department to bring us back something, knowing that we have another bite at this apple.
Jack,
question. Elena, have you talked to Chirogenics about this at all, about the baffle?
We have.
And what is their preliminary thoughts on it?
If they do think that they can make something work very, very respectfully, as we're talking to other trucking companies, it's that also move product up and down the haul road. We are essentially hearing that what we're proposing is like a dream scenario that no engineering firms have been able to solve so far. Now, ours is a different kind of product than the other fuels that move up and down, and having it not pull in the back is an ideal scenario, but it's not something that makes the current 15 trailers not usable. They will use the 15 trailers in the exact way that they're going to that they were currently designed. If There is another possibility that that we need to talk about here. The Premier Cryogenics might come up with a solution, and it might be a heavy solution that takes that then takes away from our payload. And so us as IGU, we would have to decide: are we willing to pay more per MCF to make the trailers an ideal solution for our trucking company, where can they have sufficient safeguards in place? And I'm not a trucker. Like, they lift axles, they put axles down, they chain more or less depending on the road conditions. They have to go slower or faster, etc. We already have trailers without it. They're gonna work with them. Middle Fork confirmed they would. Ryan, who is the head engineer for Premier Cryogenics, was in the truck when Roger, who just stepped out, did the test of the new trailer. So they talked together. They saw the exact conditions of the Dalton Highway. So there's a good probability that that some kind of solution might be found. And Ryan did indicate that he had some preliminary ideas. If we were to move forward with the exact amount that we need without the baffles, it would essentially secure our place in line in the queue of production while we start the engineering.
And do you think that we would know by next month? First of all, is the design and, well, is this the design? So is the fabrication process such that they can start fabrication now?
Yeah.
And still without any undue consequences, add baffles as we go along?
Yes.
Okay.
I visited the facility twice during the time that they were working on our first order, and I've seen the stages at which they do the different the different stages of production, mm-hmm. And they have the outer jacket that's essentially just a ring, mm-hmm. and the inner jacket that's another ring, and there's the insulation that needs to be fabricated. So yes, the production process can start, and baffles can be added later.
Jim, I see your hand up.
Jim texted me. He said he can't unmute. Can you try to see if you can unmute him?
But anyway, I'm glad to hear it. Because I'm in the middle of the IGU meeting, I muted the meeting to chat with you. So that was too really.
And you're on not muted, Zane. It's okay. So we're waiting for Gary.
I'm here.
No, we're waiting for. I'm sorry. We're waiting for Jim. He can't unmute his phone. So I'll
can call him on his cell phone.
He's calling on his cell phone, isn't he?
Jim, Erica sent you a request to unmute. There you go.
Okay. Okay, Jim.
Am I unmuted?
Yes, you have the floor now. We can hear you.
Okay. So Erica said there's no engineer working on this baffling design, and she doubts that anybody will work on to it. Or start working on it until they get an order. So I'm kind of curious, what's the problem with giving them an order for the original trailer that we got and appears to work? And get a baffling design down the road. We can pull the pin on the baffling design anytime we want to, but I think it's imperative we get going on these 3D trailers, and if we want to get a family design, we're going to have to put it in order.
Okay. Did you lose him?
No, I think he's
finished. Is that, did you conclude your statement there, Jim? You kind of faded out at the end.
Well, I think I've got a bad...
bad connection, maybe? Okay. I think you got the gist of what he said? Okay. I would tend to agree with what he said. In my mind, I look at this, do you already have 13 trailers or something? 15 trailers that are already this way, and this is like a, you know, the cherry on top of the thing. And we're not going to modify any of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm thinking about why not? Why aren't we just giving the green light to this thing? And we can, like you said, we can pull the pin on this baffle thing whenever we want.
Not whenever, but I think
within the month, next month or two, right, or three or four, you know, probably. So, anyhow. So, Sherry.
Chip, I guess I was not aware of any baffling issue. There was a baffle design flaw, almost in a certain sense, kind of like the axles, right? So it does make me concur with Gary in a certain sense that it almost seems like an engineering flaw or something. I don't know.
Okay, let me
get
back up.
It is a middle forklift.
When she explained this, she said she wanted to buy some trailers, right? She looked at them and she said, well, I have some extra money. And somebody mentioned, oh, what if we put baffles in it? It's kind of a cool idea. And so there's not a flaw.
So did I miss something somewhere along the line, or is this the first time the baffling issue has come up?
We've never heard about baffles before.
Oh, because then I saw the drum brakes, and I thought that might be solving the problems. I don't know, the drum brakes instead of the disc brakes.
It's not a baffling issue.
That's not
it's a baffle.
A baffle, I understand that now. Baffle so you avoid the sloshing. I got it. But I didn't see anything about that in the
I think the drum brakes should be for a different reason.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, drum brakes are for a different reason, nothing to do with the baffles.
So, do we have a cost estimate for the baffle issue?
We don't even have a design yet. It's a concept. It says, okay, oh, it'd be nice if we could do this.
An alternative way for me to have done this, the exact same action would have been to ask for the exact amount that I needed to perform the trailers and then to come later once I have the design and request for authorization to add the baffles and explain their value. I was trying to do it all in one action, and maybe that wasn't the best approach.
Yeah, Chair. So it seems to me there's no downside with ordering the trailers and then retrofitting them later or after they've already gotten under the construction phase, that we could add the baffles then.
Yeah, not retrofitting, but after, when they're during construction.
But our existing 15 trailers, we cannot add the baffles to.
No.
We could, but we won't.
Well, you have to cut them open.
Well, in theory, one could.
Yeah.
They're not going to add baffles. They're not going to go back and retrofit the trailers with baffles. The baffles are an integral part of the trailer itself.
Jack.
So personally, really what this does, if we authorize now, is get us in line for them to do this.
Correct.
They don't even necessarily even start on our construction the day that we send them the order, do they?
Correct. They do not.
I mean, and so a month from now, they probably haven't even started on construction of our trailers.
That's very likely. And I don't know that a month from now they will have us in line for the new engineering that we need. They gave us a quote, and that's once we sign a contract, that's when we move forward with things. The quote did not include the back. It's not baffles. The trailers already have baffles, but it's a system that moves.
From past experience, how long did it take them to actually construct a trailer from the start to the finish of the trailer? I mean, did they even gave us delivered the trailers in stages?
They did.
It's not like they started on 12 trailers all at once and then finished 12 trailers together. They
Correct.
Did three and then three more, something like that.
Correct.
So, and so if they're a year out, you know, I'm speculating it doesn't take them more than 6 months to contract one of those trailers. And so They're not starting now on the trailers. They're starting sometime in the future on the trailers.
Right.
So there's really should be adequate time to engage them in this baffling issue, and then, you know, come to terms with it even before they start construction.
That's correct. And from past experience, last time we placed an order, we made so many engineering decisions after the order was already placed and they were already working on it, on the specifics of many, many specifics. Yes, everything you said is correct. And they do work on exactly three trailers at a time.
Which kind of caused some issues later down the road. We'll get there. Okay, sure.
So, you know, it's almost like we need a cost estimate of what this engineering solution will be and then compare that to the benefits. It's kind of a cost-benefit analysis. So I'm kind of leaning more towards what Gary's kind of thinking. Because we have to get the trailers. You can't put the baffles in after you've got them under construction, is what I'm hearing.
You.
But as I just said, they're not going to go into construction the day that she places the order.
Wouldn't it be in the scope of work?
No.
No?
No, the baffles haven't even been designed yet.
Okay.
They're not going to give you a quote until they have a concept, and then we're going to get that anyhow. Mm-hmm. So she'll come back and say, okay, here's what they came up with, and you have to do the whole trade-off. Do you want to have the extra weight in there to drop off your payload, or... Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things going on, and we may choose not to even do it then,
right,
in the future. So,
well, we had the flawed engineering of the axles before, so, and I'm risk averse, so. There's
like,
got to be a
like
cost involved with them. What are they asking? Are they asking us to pay something for them to try to design something to solve the problem? Or
this is not a mistake. It's not a mistake that was made originally, that we're discovering now. It's not a mistake.
What are the benefits versus the cost creating this engineering?
And we will know that perhaps in a month.
The increment part.
But it seems like it would have to be in the contract that we want you to explore this option, and they're not going to do it for free.
They will not charge us for engineering. They will charge us for the final product.
If we're specifically the only entity that's using this solution, wouldn't they want to charge us for this solution?
They will charge us to manufacture it, and the cost that they spent engineering it will likely be incorporated in the cost of the manufacture. And they will also not, this will be a proprietary engineering product of theirs. They will not, it's not like they will turn the engineering work over to where we can hand that to anybody else. In that case, they would likely charge us. But as long as we become even more tied to them because they alone have this potential solution.
I'd just like to compare the marginal benefits versus the marginal cost of this idea. What are the marginal benefits versus the marginal costs?
And we'll know that when we ask them to do it. We'll know that when we ask them to do it.
Shouldn't we have a sense of that now?
Why?
We're trying to solve a problem of sloshing natural gas in a truck, right, trailer. So what are the benefits versus the cost? Is it a risk? Is it, could the trailers tip over? What are the costs versus the benefits? Why can't we ask that question?
So one thing is it's not a sloshing issue.
Okay.
It's not.
It's pooling. Let me use that word.
Pooling.
So
I understand the issue. I'm not using the right words.
So, here from my opinion, the trailer, we've got a ton of them already, we're not going to change, right? This is saying, hey, can we make this trailer maybe better? It's a twinkle.
Because it adds more volume, or is it safer?
It'll add more weight, which may take away some volume. Maybe there's trade-offs that we'll come up with later on. So, right now, the trailer is not going to change. All that's going to change would be maybe the addition of a baffle, or container, apartments, whatever you want to call it, in there to control the pooling when you go up a hill. But we already have 13 of them that don't even have that, and we don't intend to put it in. So I don't, you know, you can be really analytical and look at the incremental cost, but we don't have any data for that at all. But we do have an estimate for the 99% of the the trailer, right? This is just like an add-on. So do you want to have an extra cup holder in your Ford? You know, it's like, okay, great. You know, no, I don't want it. Yes, I do want it. To me, it's not a driving factor, because we're, you know, if it was a driving factor, we had to have them all retrofitted. I'd be going, what the heck?
Absolutely.
But this is not one of
but
those.
But for three more, we should do a cost-benefit analysis.
This is somebody saying, hey, you could, we could maybe add something that maybe solve this problem. It may not even be a problem. It's not a problem for a lot of other truckers, but it's a gravy solution. So do you want to be in the, you know, getting the absolute best cherry and put it on top of this little Sunday we got going on here? Or I think they're going a little overboard, my opinion. But
Gary has his hand raised.
And Mike had his hand up because I saw Mike first. Mike,
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just two questions. One is a clarification of the amendment, and then a question to the maker of the amendment. From my understanding, the amendment on the floor is to delay this for until the August meeting. That was
the main motion.
Yes. And my question to the maker of the main motion, Director Wilkins, does he still wish, as he has heard the discussion around the table, does he still wish to continue that motion?
I see no reason why we can't forestall this action for a month. Or maybe part.
Thank you, Director.
Okay. Jack.
So, likewise, I see no benefit in doing so, because construction of the trailers is not going to start this month. And so we're going to, in a month or even 2 months, be able to decide whether we want to have baffles in the trailers. The construction of the trailers won't even have started yet. So it's not like we're going to affect, basically, the delivery of the we're not going to affect, it's not like we're going to be into construction and then have to change the construction process to do something in the baffles. So I see no benefit in waiting. Because we have time to do this cost-benefit analysis before the construction of the trailers even starts.
May I respond, Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead. Sure.
Well, I think we've been down this road before, and it cost us millions of dollars when we were doing engineering on the fly, and we left the axles, as a group, everyone, I'm not pointing fingers, but everyone left the axles and weren't sure how those axles were going to perform, nor whether they should have been mounted where they were mounted. So we are right now experiencing millions of dollars that our ratepayers are paying for because we did engineering on the fly. And I have no idea what these baffles will cost. But I can say that if we go back to Premier Cargenic and say we are concerned about the cost of this pooling, and let me just make an aside, I think I heard someone say this is the first time they've ever experienced this. So working off of that, they are going to have to come up with something, and we have no idea what that's going to be. We have $100,000 in wheel room. I don't understand why we just don't ask them, tell them you're waiting for an order of three trailers. We're waiting on a range of costs for this. It could be $30,000. It could be $300,000. We don't know, but that puts the pressure on them to come up with at least a range that we can have a sense of what it's going to be. So, again, I don't understand the reason why we wouldn't put this off for a month and not repeat what we've already done and have been bitten by engineering on the fly.
I am not going to respond and or interfere in the board debate, since I've already expressed management's opinion. I just want to, for the record, and in case anybody, especially journalists, are listening to this after the fact, The change that we've experienced with the axle move was $37,500 per trailer, and not millions of dollars. I just want to correct the record, if I may. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jack.
But one thing, Gary, is we don't know, and I highly doubt, and we don't know in a month that Cairogenics can come up with the solution and the cost and the advantages and disadvantages, additional weight. How does that do in a month?
The timing has no issue here. We aren't going to know. We certainly may know in a month if we tell them that there's an order waiting on it. We may at least get a range from them. But if we don't put pressure on them to come back with something, which, again, they have no experience at, then we may be saddled with another, whatever 15 times 37,000 is, change order on this when we didn't really need to get into it in the first place. That's where we are.
Okay, so we're kind of repeating ourselves. Any more conversation before we go to a vote?
I'm just curious if the board would like George's opinion as the main person in charge of engineering at IGU.
Want to step into this, Curry? Come on in, George.
Well, one of the thoughts that I have is that you're going to struggle with your cost-benefit analysis even when the time comes, because we're going to look at things that's weight, balance, capacity, and everything else. But the real move behind adding those baffles to the trailer was increasing traction when you're climbing a hill. We're not going to know that without an empirical solution. So until you're putting it on the road, you don't know. So turning around and saying we're going to delay and wait until we have the cost of this to weigh the cost benefit, you don't really have a comparison to make. And then on the other side of this, I think the production and stand down time concerns me. If we continue to delay, and God forbid none of us want it, but we know the haul of road is a whole different animal, if we start losing a trailer or two off the side, or we start seeing any issue in structural stability and have to make modifications, we're now further behind in trying to keep up the production coming off of the slope versus getting in the queue and allowing them to make the engineering efforts to see if we can come up with something. So I see substantial detriment to not at least getting in the queue and letting them start the engineering and work through the process.
Thank you, sir. Any more discussion before we go to a vote? Hearing none, Jessica, Erica, would you please call the roll?
For Director Wilkins' motion?
Yes, the motion to postpone.
Okay.
For a month.
Director Miller?
Yes.
Director Wall?
Abstain. I just had one more point before the vote.
Can you abstain?
I think you can.
Yeah.
Wait,
Rain is on the line.
Can you abstain in this vote?
There's a bit of a debate over that. I think the correct position is that as a public member, you have to vote. You can't abstain. But there's a debate on that. I want to say it too authoritative. That'd be what I'd recommend. You can't abstain.
You cannot.
Correct.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. But so people have been known to run out of the room when it's time to vote.
People can know
I could vote yes or no and not run out of the room if this was the exact wording on the contract and we weren't obligated for the engineering piece, like get the trailer started without having the engineering cost, and then we could discuss.
Are you okay with that wording?
I would be perfectly okay with that wording, like get going with the trailers and then we maybe delay the baffle piece.
Okay, so you can make that amendment when the main motion comes up.
Okay. So, no.
Okay. Good, Erica.
Director Wilbur?
No.
Director Wilkin?
Yes.
Vice Chair Dodson shall also call. No. And Chair Hagerson?
No. The motion fails, and we'd be ready for another motion. If someone would like to make a motion.
So, what is the actual cost of trailers?
It's on the next page. It is
1172004.
Yes, sir.
So I move to authorize General Manager to enter into a contract with Premier Cargating Services LLC for the acquisition of 3 new LNG transfer trailers for a total amount of $1,172,004.
For a second?
Second.
Okay, any debate?
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Go ahead. Carry on.
I'd like some discussion to the point we can. The decision to replace drum brakes with disc brakes, is that a cost item or is it just something they did? I wonder if we could get on the record why that's being done.
George, you want to take that? It is not a cost item.
It is not a cost item. It is not an item that's anticipated to modify weight or payload. The large decision behind it is that your disc brakes have a dust cover that run along the backside of them that are prone to collecting snow, ice, and mud buildup and increased wear on the brake components, as well as axles, hubs, everything associated with it, whereas going to a drum brake has a contained unit which is less prone to that buildup and easier to maintain.
Okay. All right. Thank you, George.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Jeff.
Are our existing disc brakes going to be replaced with drum brakes as a maintenance issue in the future?
As they wear off, they will be replaced with disc brakes. They will not be replaced prematurely.
I mean, with drum brakes?
With drum brakes, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Any more debate? Ready for a vote? Okay, Erica, would you call the roll?
Director Wall?
Yes.
Director Wilbur?
Yes.
Director Miller?
Yes.
Director Wilkin?
No.
Chair Hagerson?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay, motion passes. We are moving on to General Manager Signature Authority.
Just like I'm going with my thoughts.
Okay.
We are on page 39 of 58. So to keep us all on the same level, I will go through the existing policies and how things are done today, and then I will go to what I would ask the board to modify. For the record, Erica, go to the next page, please. I need to. There's two mentions of policy 2018-01 in here that needs to, that both of those need to change to 2018-06. Nothing else, just the policy number was wrong. Policy 01 was later updated in policy 06. So currently, the General Manager's Procurement Authority is described in three separate documents. One is the IGU management policy 4.2 that is in red line, included on page 41. This management policy essentially says that I'll direct your attention to point 2, the third bullet. So it says that, it currently says, if funds have been appropriated or are otherwise allocated within regularly approved budgets, and the resource, such as funding, personnel, facilities, and space required to fulfill the commitment are available, then General Manager is authorized to exercise authority and essentially sign contracts. Now, on page 42, if you look at the deleted portion of the red line, this same policy then also sends to the resolution 2018-01. So in the deleted portion over on the side, it says that other than the standards that point in fourth and two, which we just read, this policy excludes transactions that are covered by and separately addressed in the resolution. So then we go to the resolution, which is included in your packet on page 44. And the resolution in point three limits the general manager's procurement authority to It limits the general manager's procurement authority to $150,000. Lastly, starting on page 46, we have IGU financial policy 2.6. And on there, on the second page of the policy, so page 47 of 58, if we go to B5, it says that I have to have the board's approval if any transaction that I authorize causes the operating expenditures to exceed 2.5% of the total annual operating budget, or going to six, if the transaction that general manager authorizes would exceed 5% of the approved capital budget, then the general manager requires board approval. Any questions before I move on about the current state of general manager authorization?
Any questions?
Could you sum it up with what all in total what this all says?
Yes. In total, what this all says is that if a transaction is budgeted for and under $150,000, I can authorize it without board approval. I am also, regardless of amount, I am not allowed to authorize any transactions that would make us exceed budget by 2.5% for the operating budget or by 5% for the capital budget.
How is that possible though, if we have to authorize anything at over $150,000? How would it be possible to exceed a 2.5% increase in the thing?
Maybe you've already authorized up to 2%, and if I were to spend another $150,000, then we'd go to 2.5. Okay, good. Now going to what I am proposing is modified. We go back to page 41 of 58.
Can you summarize what you're trying to first?
Yes. Yes.
And get into the detail?
Yes. To summarize, what I am proposing we do is say that if the board already authorized an expenditure when approved the budget, then I can sign whatever contracts are necessary to proceed to do IGU business without additional board approval, because you've already approved it through the budget.
And would it allow you then, in this case, to spend up to $1.3 million on the trailers?
It would have.
Rather than the actual of $1.1
million? Correct. $1.2 million. I am also currently, without changing anything, authorized to make change orders to contracts that do not exceed $150,000, even if they go over budgeted amounts. So in theory, if the budgeted amount was exactly how much three trailers cost, I still could go to 1.3.
Mm-hmm.
So, my opinion. Okay, my opinion is this is a little convoluted still, and so, and it may be simpler just to give you a hard dollar number and say if it's budgeted, like $1 million. Here's a $1 million cap. You still have to report to the board you did it, but if it's budgeted, and you use some other conditions in there, up to $1 million, you're good to go. And it's good because you don't sign that $1 million contract, right? This would just get. What we'd like to do is avoid having to wait and get it in front of the board. But this one kind of gives you unlimited. I personally don't like the 2%, 2.5% of the budget, and that's
current policy.
I don't know what the operating budget is.
That's current.
That's current.
I never have liked it. But what is our operating budget right now?
So the author on number 5 are authorized for $1 million for operating expenditures and $65,000 for the capital budget.
No, I understand, but what mm-hmm. is our operating budget total?
Excluding cost of goods sold. Read the definition above.
Oh yeah, we had that conversation before.
So
we, yeah.
About $300,000.
Yeah, it's very small.
Oh, so you're 2.5% of $300,000.
I forget. She called me that last time I had this conversation. We were reviewing this because it was excludes the cost of goods sold, so therefore it's only about $300,000+.
The 2.5% is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and our capital budget's never very large to begin with either, so it's not. We're talking less than $300,000 as well. So.
That isn't that bit of information, but.
And so, I don't know. I like the fact that $1.2 million purchase comes before the board, even though that it is budgeted. I think that's.
So we're trying to.
The limit right now is $150,000. Before it comes to the board, and we can talk at a different time whether that should be raised, but I certainly don't think it should be raised to $1 million, which would even $1 million wouldn't resolve this issue. And so, what is it? What should it be? We decided that one, and recently we raised it from $50,000 to $150,000. It hasn't always even been $150,000, I don't think.
In 2018,
okay.
Resolution 01 gave $50,000, and then later that same year,
it went to $150,000.
It went to $150,000. That was 2018.
So I would say, for me, at a different meeting, maybe we want to decide to raise that limit. But I'm not in favor of making the limit to whatever is budgeted for some item.
So, likewise, you may want to go back to the drawing board, think about what you're trying to save. And so you're trying to save having to wait until the board meeting to get things approved and give you. And so my question would be, is how many times you came to the board for $150,000? If you went to, say, $750,000 or some other number, what would it, now how many times do you have to come to the board? And what you're really, are you saving much time by doing that? And how often do you do it? If you do like one a year, it's probably not going to be very helpful to anybody's time. That would be my thought.
And as I pointed out before, we have a meeting scheduled every 2 weeks. It's on the schedule. We don't have monthly meetings scheduled. We have a meeting scheduled every 2 weeks. We choose not to exercise that work session meeting, and that can be called to be a special meeting if needed. If it was that big a deal,
that's true.
It would be 2 weeks.
I don't think it's a big falling short deal though. We're just trying to see if we could just shave away some of the delay that would take. Have to come to the board and schedule it for a board meeting, wait a month. You get the bids in your hand, and you've got to wait a month. So if you could sign it earlier, that would be get you going earlier. Or it forces you to open your bids right before the board meeting so you can get them at the board right away. The scheduling thing. So. Any more debate? Unless somebody wants to make the motion. But without a motion, I think that would be my thoughts. And review it, and we can come back either at another board meeting with some more data to back it up and see what the right level is. Maybe consolidate all these into one. You're not referencing the policy. Normally doesn't reference the resolution. Just understand, consolidate the stuff together and clean it up.
Okay.
That would be my recommendation. Any other thoughts on that, or? Okay. Can I move on? Without objection, moving on. Okay. That's good. Clarification on the GM contract language. I'm going to take this one. Last year's contract was brought to the board. We reviewed the bars. We had made comments and changes to it. We sent it off to get modified. It came back to us with a red line, and there were red lines on the modified form. But the fact is that there was a change that was not redlined. So in my mind, we didn't make a comment on this thing, and then when it came forward, it was magically changed without any, and there was no debate on it at all. And Zane went back and looked at all the executive sessions, the meetings, and so to no fault of Elena, this term got modified in her contract. And so I would recommend that we just go back and make it retroactive to what the board looked at originally to say, well, that's the clause we'd all talked about and didn't choose to change, as opposed to trying to say, well, let's, I don't know how you solve it any other way, but just go back to that point and just say, that's now going to be in effect. And just to reach back and make that into effect retroactively so we can go through the auditors, and the auditors will say, yeah, that was all done correctly. So.
So, point. So we voted on something
So we reviewed a contract, uh-huh. And we made comments and said, okay, you want to change 1, 3, 5, and 7.
Okay.
And that went to Zane to get redlined and to come back. When he came back with a red line, there was a red line on 1, 3, 5, and 7, and 10 was changed.
Oh.
It was just different. You know?
Okay.
And so... I'm recommending that we go back to the original wording, not to the one that wasn't asked to be changed, but was changed.
See, in other words, you're asking to do this to not use the one we actually voted on, but to use the one we thought we were going to vote
on. Yes. Yes.
Not the one we actually voted on, but the one we thought we were voting on.
Yes.
Okay. And
now, if it would have been a red line, he would have brought it up over here, and I'm cool with what we voted on, but it wasn't. And so everybody looked at the red line, went and they walked us through the red line, but it didn't. So
what is the effect of going?
And so, if I get the right page, there's an additional $300 stipend towards medical benefits enrolled, and then whether she's in the plan or not. And the difference would be, it was like a year ago, it would be like $3,600 or something to get back, or $3,900 on math, and 36. She'd have to return to us, but I'm saying that was no fault of hers at all. That was a red line.
Yeah. Okay, so what we actually voted on, though, is what is actually happening.
Yes. No. They caught it. What happened, what they voted on, said you don't get it. It's just, the red line version, it had this clause in it. We voted on that, but it was changed. That's what we voted
on. What did the red line version say?
And I have to find this.
So it said originally, the first contract, the contract that you voted on, said an additional $300 monthly stipend towards medical premiums if enrolled, or as a direct payment if not enrolled in the medical plan.
Right.
That's what we voted on.
That's what you voted on. However,
that's the original. We didn't vote on that. We just gave changes, recommended changes.
Is that right, Zane? Did I have it backwards?
That's correct.
Okay. And then what we're doing now is in fact actually the first section right there where that she's actually entitled to premiums, even though the existing contract that assigned says that right there. If you would highlight $300 monthly stipend would pay to the employee if she is not enrolled in the medical plan.
That's the original wording. That's what we've been doing.
That's not what we've been doing. That's why we're deciding what the board wants to do now with regards to that.
Well, let's look at the last paragraph. It says, as a result, the general manager as receiving $300 monthly stipend while enrolled in AGU's medical plan. Isn't that what you want?
Which is consistent with what the board's original intent was, right? Yes.
So I thought you just said it isn't what she's getting.
No, I said that is what she's getting, but the contract says...
So look on the screen. Look on the screen here. It says, in June 24, the board reviewed and supported the contract language. It didn't want to change it. The additional $300 stipend towards the medical premiums if enrolled as a direct payment if not enrolled in the medical plan, right? And then the next in July, we came back and we voted on that one. Mm-hmm. And that's the one that said a $300 stipend will be paid to the employee if she is not enrolled in the medical plan. And that's the one that was shifted, different. They've been implementing the original one. They didn't catch it for a year. Who caught it, but good job. So they've been operating on the June 24th version for the last year. So she's been receiving it. That version right there, that's what we've been operating under. And what this motion would do is would be to retroactively approve, change it back to that.
Well,
as a board action.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, retroactively amend the contract to what is actually happening now.
Right.
The intent was exactly the intent.
And that would pass the auditors, right?
So it's sufficient, yeah. It's not. Yeah, it's more than sufficient.
So that's our recommendation, is to make this motion here, basically that approves that original June 24th concept.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Gary.
I'm sorry, I'm really struggling to keep up with the conversation. So let me ask, on page 51, the final sentence, resolve this matter from the board's intent. I'm recommending that the board adopt the motion as presented. Right. What motion are we speaking of? The one on page 90?
The one on page 50. Page 50.
I mean, page 50.
Yes.
Okay, and you're recommending that be voted in affirmative today?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
What do you think, sir?
The motion seems to be a little bit different than this because the original, I wasn't here for this discussion, but the original one says if enrolled, the next one says not enrolled, and so the motion is whether she's enrolled or not enrolled?
She is enrolled.
Right. But it's regardless of medical plan enrollment now,
right.
But the verbiage here says something else.
We took it away, so if she is enrolled, she doesn't get it.
It just says the same thing, Sherry. You're looking at what's right there in the middle of the page.
The second one is what?
There's an additional $300 monthly stipend towards medical premiums if enrolled or as a direct payment if not enrolled.
Yeah.
So it's regardless, it's either one. So.
Okay. So that would be my
question. Are you ready for a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that we confirm that the general manager is to receive a $300 monthly stipend in regards to the medical plan enrollment, authorizing it for all of fiscal year 25, and direct that this provision be included in the fiscal year 26 contract.
Okay. Second.
Okay. Thanks for the motion and a second. Ms. Sherry, any further debate? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Director Miller?
Yes.
Director Wall?
Yes.
Director Wilbur?
Yes.
Director Wilkin?
Yes.
Chair Hagen?
Yes.
Motion passed.
Okay, thank you. That gets us to other reports. So the general manager report on page 53.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I was just making sure that he's still here. I want to introduce to the board and to welcome to IGU Hudson Boldu. He has joined our team as the Community Relations Manager. He's coming to us from UIF and has already hit the ground running. He started last week. If the board so desires, he'll start reporting directly to the board in a few months.
You can come on up and try the chair out now if you want. Welcome. Nice to see you here.
A few other notes. I'll be out of the office next week. Situate Ratings completed their annual review and they decided not to publish any formal commentary this year, which is actually a good thing because our BBB upgrade from last year stands. The oil markets are look like they're going to continue on a downtrend. However, we still natural gas is still cheaper than the residential delivered heating oil. We talked about plant production on new customers. As of the date this report came out, we had 159 approved for construction. We have 169 today. About a third of those are commercial properties. The rest are residential properties. And I already spoke to the fact that 16 of them are using gas. We still have 32 service lines that we've installed last year that have not yet turned on. We expect several of those to turn on, and unfortunately, as it is the case every year, a few of those will not. And the one thing the only other thing to note is Middle Fork came to us, as I've shared, in executive session at the last meeting, and they pointed out some operational difficulties that they are having because their business plan relied on a harvest start date of January 1st. It has continued being moved, and so as a way to help help them and to extend a goodwill gesture, we have executed an amendment. It is a temporary amendment whereby we are currently, they're currently on the Cook Inlet route. We are paying them North Slope pricing. Once we switch to the North Slope, they will be charging us Cook Inlet pricing for North Slope runs until the credit has been fully paid for. So it's this will show up in financial statements as a timing difference. This will not have an effect on the end of the year budget. In a similar measure, two board meetings ago, the board authorized the trailer maintenance contract for Middle Fork. The trailer maintenance contract had specific rates for the for North Slope runs, for Cook Inlet runs, and for Canada runs, and we have signed the contract with them. And as of July 1st, they are doing trailer maintenance again at no end effect to the budget. As such, we have made some staffing modifications at Titan. One of the operators chose to leave. He's going to work for Harvest up north. And then we did one layoff to accommodate for the change in how we do trailer maintenance. All of that was previously discussed. The timeline changed. Again, there is no negative effect on the budget. And that, Mr. Chair, completes my report unless there are any questions.
Any questions for Erin? No questions? Might be off easy. Okay, thank you very much. Gets us to the attorney's report. Zane.
Good afternoon. Hey, I have my written report. IDU continues to be
fairly light on the use of legal services, which is a good thing. I think everyone would agree. Hopefully it will continue. And other than that, I really have nothing to add unless the board has questions.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Gary.
So, Zane, is there anything we should know about number three, responsibility of Steamline Strike?
I remember the exact dates, and later give you more details, but we were digging in downtown. Most utilities are on the call reporting service. We thought that the folks there that run the downtown steam unit were on that service also. Turns out they weren't. And then we looked at this legal responsibility under it, and the statute is a little bit less specific in terms of how it reads. You don't have to be involved in that service, and if you're not and you don't get notification, then you've still got some potential issues. So that was basically kind of the conversation. It should be a matter dealt with, I think, with, we're dealing with insurance and things of that nature. I haven't had any follow-up on the details of that. If you wanted those, Lana could brief you, but I don't think it's going to be a big deal for IGU by any means.
So when it says responsibility, is there a responsibility that IGU may be need to account for and a cost involved in that responsibility?
That would be correct.
So is there a chance that we have some costs associated with that responsibility?
There's a chance, yes.
However, it would not come, if I may, from our operating budget if IGU is found liable, and that's a big if, then our insurance company would pay.
Any idea of the amount of this line strike?
The other utility did submit their estimated amount, yes. There's a lot of dispute in there.
What would be the range of that cost?
A little over $100,000.
$100,000 plus or minus?
Their claim is for, I believe, around $120,000. The insurance has now hired an investigator.
Okay. Keep us advised. Thank you. Thank you, Zane.
Okay. Any more questions for Zane? And about, I'm going to go back and let Elena talk about her grant page. She thought she was done, but she's not.
My apologies, this is a new portion of the general manager's report, and it is here at Director Dodson's request at the last finance committee meeting. So we're talking about grants coming, going, what we've received, what we haven't. So this is a one-stop shop for everything grant-related. So as you can see on here, we're currently administering four different grants that we have received last year or so. All of these grants are on reimbursable basis, so we have to do the work or purchase the product and then submit invoices and then get reimbursed for them. And so you can see the board is relatively aware of all of these, the PHMSA grant, the $90,000 grant to purchase some emergency equipment. We've purchased all of it, I believe, to date, and it's just a matter of when checks come in. The Shovel Ready grant is the $250,000 grant that we are a sub-awardee of UAF on, and that is to get us to a shovel-ready state for the big $17 million grant to connect Fairbanks to North Pole. We've just recently started work on that and submitted our first invoice. You can see the targeted airshed grant. We're probably going to, not probably, we will install everything, all the pipe that's left in during this construction season, so $1.3 million of that. And then we have the State of Alaska capital allocation that we will we have not budgeted to fully expand this season. Then we've applied for 4 other grants. The first one, there is a cybersecurity grant. We've talked to the board about that. We applied for about $360,000. State of Alaska has completed their review, and they have now submitted it to FEMA, and they do not have a timeline when word will come back on who is awarded grant funding and who is not. Importantly, in there, a match was required. It was a 20% match that this grant requires, but the state of Alaska said that they would pay the match for anybody who is a successful applicant. I have fresh update as of today for the Environmental Justice Thriving Communities Grant Program. We applied for it with the purpose to perform some preliminary engineering on phase 3 of the North Pole build-out. The day after applications were due, the administration froze all of the funding in that account. Since then, Philanthropy Northwest has sued and won. As of today, the funds are available, so they're going to start ranking those proposals. We have submitted the Defense Community Infrastructure Program on July 3rd, and if there's anything that you thought any of us needed to do and we haven't done, it's because we were working on that grant. It was a beast. Everybody was involved. That made 15 different budgets for it. But it's there. It's very strong. We received a very strong letter of support from Fort Wainwright. There is a specific, if the you get an additional 5 points out of 100, if the commander of the base says that the project is mission critical, and our commander said it was, and so we feel like we are in a relatively strong position for that. The only drawback is that I believe they only have $60 million available, and we're asking for 17 of that. But we will find out by August 1st. If on August 1st we are notified that we are one of the successful applicants, we will then have to do a second round of submitting a fuller proposal, a more detailed budget. And then if that matches the intent of the grant, then it will be awarded on a non-competitive basis. But we felt like $17 million was a drop everything and do that type of endeavor. And we submitted a very strong application. I'm very proud of the team for doing that. And then we worked with Fairbanks North Star Borough Administration. This is the second year in a row where the mayor of the Fairbanks North Star Borough submits on IGU's behalf, or on the borough's behalf, a request for a congressional appropriation. Bryce Ward did that last year, and Greg Hopkins did that this year. The request has been, in both cases, $20 million, and in both cases, Senator Murkowski has included 3 of those million in her request to be added to the appropriations bill. Last year, that was accepted by the Appropriations Committee and moved forward for a Congress vote. It's just the Congress did not authorize any congressional direct spending. But based on that track record of the fact that Senator Murkowski was able to push it all the way through, we have a good reason to believe that it will again be included in the appropriations bill to then be decided by Congress sometime before next March. Thank you. That concludes my grant report.
Now we're concluded.
So there was no $20 million grant request. In other words,
we asked Senator Murkowski for $20
million. Right.
She asked. She accepted that 3 of those millions is something that she wants to put her.
Right. So we have a $3 million grant request in there.
Okay. Correct.
Basically.
Yes.
So the $17 million, isn't that the one that last year we didn't get because we didn't have a shovel-ready project? So, but we haven't got a shovel-ready project yet, right?
We don't, but we have shown in our grant writing significant efforts towards that with deadlines. So the shovel-ready grant, the $250,000 one, that has a performance period of December 30th. So we have to complete all of this work. The major reason for which we've only expended $10,000 off of the $250,000 is because most activities, such as surveying and staking and site surveys, they needed to happen this quarter as opposed to last quarter because of snow. Mm-hmm. So this quarter, you will see after we submit this quarter's request, we'll ask for more, most of the remaining amount.
So we're going in with the $17 million grant saying we will be shovel ready.
Yes, by the time that they actually appropriate funds, which is September, we will be shovel ready.
September?
September 30th is the end of the, so there's two steps. Step one, we're gonna know in August. And then when we are notified in August, then we have to put together a grant application. And then that grant application, as long as it meets the criteria, is awarded non-competitively before the federal fiscal year end on September 30th.
And then we're going to be shovel-ready when?
We will be in our grant application, we said that we will be shovel-ready in 2027 in the second quarter of 2027 because of NEPA requirements. But we have demonstrated now, last year's grant required that you start grant disturbing activities within 12 months of award. This year that requirement got taken away and you just have to demonstrate that you're going to be able to finish the project within 5 years.
Wasn't the university doing, or some group doing the NEPA, initial NEPA work?
We have gotten this grant, the shovel-ready grant is going to pay for $60,000 worth of ABR Consulting's environmental compliance work. Last year's application, hand on the heart, we didn't know what NEPA was. We didn't even mention it in last year's application. We don't typically have to do NEPA because our sources of funding are non-federal, and we've learned quite a bit in the last year.
Okay. Any more questions for Elena? Seeing none, we'll go to the director's comments. Gary, any comments?
Yeah, thank you, Steve. Three quick ones. When we look at page, not going back to Clay's report, I just want to make sure I'm reading it right. On page 20 of 58 in his report, I want to make sure I'm reading that. On his page 12, ours 20 of 58. So when I look at that, am I seeing that the first load of LNG coming to Fairbanks is anticipated to be the 1st of September?
Yeah, so no, that says the first LNG will happen in August. The commencement date is a heavily defined contractual term. And that is why he's saying September 1st, because contractually, the commencement date happens on the first day of the first month during which they can give us LNG for 30 days if we choose to pick it up.
So does that mean that the first truck that heads south with our gas on our LNG on it will be September 1st?
No, it will be in August.
Oh, it will be in August. Okay.
That's what that says. Whether or not it will be in August, don't hold me to that.
All right. I'm obviously curious because of what we're going through, but the follow-on to that is that, and I know you know, but just and I know Steve knows, but I've been asked on two different occasions to make sure when there's some sort of a public event, we'll say, whether it's a trailer leaving or whatever it is, or a ribbon cutting on the slope, that Ada wants to be involved and wants to be invited. So they've asked me to make sure that that's going to happen, and I know that's on our to-do list, and that will happen. But the sooner we can give them some sort of update as to an expected date, then the happier our banker will be, because they are, of course, the root of this whole thing. So, all right, that's it for there. So, let me go back. So when somebody say, well, when's your first truck going to head for Fairbanks, what do I say?
The last report we've received from Harvest says that it will be sometime in August.
Sometime in August. Okay, thank you.
All right.
Second thing, and I kind of rolled two together there. Second thing, I appreciate the general manager straightening out my broad assertion that our engineering on the run was millions of dollars. I shouldn't make comments like that, and so she grabbed my tie and pulled me into the crowd. So, but the number is, just so we know, and the record reflects, the number is $562,500 cost us to engineer on the fly with the changing of the axles. So I just want to make sure that while I was millions of dollars off, the correct cost is $562,000. And with that, thank you for letting me zoom in, and I'll see you in September. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. And Jim is offline now. Okay, so I can't skip Jim. Jack.
I don't come. Mike, don't come, but that's really
Gary.
I love the grant pattern. Wonderful. And then I missed, sorry, on the consent agenda, the minutes under the operations report. It says Director Deals. I'm thinking that means George.
Yeah. Name of promotion?
Comes with zero the director pay. Of operations.
Pay what we get paid, George. You got that? Okay. Thanks. That's a minor thing you can modify. And I have no comments, so I have a motion to adjourn.
So move, Mr. Chairman.
Second?
Second.
Without objection, we are adjourned. Thank you, guys.
Is it early? It's with
another. Have a good evening.
6:30. Holy smoke, it's certainly unusual.
Yeah.